Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning, a very cold morning, and we welcome you to our panel discussion. We have lots to talk about, and we'll get to it in just a moment. A reminder that you can join in on the conversation in a number of ways. Roundtable at WAMC.org, certainly. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable, at WAMC Roundtable. Joining us for the discussion this morning, WAMC's Alan Chartok, newsman Ray Graff. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning.
So you can mark me down for good morning.
Yes, well, I'll mark you down as present and a good morning for all. Our dear friend, Mike Spain, a little under the weather today, called in sick last night, and so we wish him well, and we hope he gets better, you know, he was on the air like every day last week.
Yeah,
so I think
yeah.
You know, maybe he's due a day, just a
mental health day.
That's
certainly.
Right.
Yes,
little R and R.
We love him. He's so smart. I mean, he's really smart.
And let him get better, and so we wish him well. And so this morning, we're going to talk to our good friend, Paul Caiano, a WNYT meteorologist, as well as provider of forecasts here on WAMC. And Paul joins us by telephone because he's actually working. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Good morning. How's everyone?
Well, we're doing fine. It's good to have you aboard. The first thing we want to talk about, and we were just having an informal conversation before the show, and I didn't know whether it was just my stupidity, but up until yesterday, I had never heard the term polar vortex before.
Well, it is a meteorological term, and usually, especially in science, and this is my opinion, we really don't pay attention to things until they affect us. And now the polar vortex is affecting us, so that's why it starts popping up all over the place.
All right, so what is it?
Well, basically, it's a pool of very cold air located at both the North Pole and the South Pole. And as we know, the coldest air gathers at the poles, and the more direct sunlight hits the equator, and that's why you have the warmest air along the equator. And then as we go through time and days and weeks and months and years, the struggle in the atmosphere, if you want to call it that, is the warmer air pushing northward from the equator, or southward, so let's say poleward from the equator, and the polar vortex, or the cold air at the poles, pushing equatorward. And it's always that flux, if you will, that creates weather. And sometimes the polar vortex dips all the way down to the latitudes that we live in. Sometimes it just stays north in Canada, or even further north toward the pole. So our weather is largely determined by how far south that polar vortex comes and how far north the milder air comes from the equator.
Now, I've heard this referred to as weather whiplash. So does that explain why one day you can have 20 below and the next day you can have 50 degrees?
Oh, absolutely. The other part about this polar vortex is that it's just a little piece of the vortex. It's not the whole thing, which means that it's pivoting in and pivoting out relatively quickly. So this is a relative quick shot of polar air that really is going to go by the boards in a matter of a couple of days. So we don't have a long stretch, a week or 10 days of this polar air. It's going to be out of here, and really by the weekend it's going to be above normal again.
But in the meantime, Paul, don't you think that that this can spell real disaster, not only in terms of some people dying as a result of being exposed to this, but also things like our citrus crops in the south?
Yeah, absolutely. Freeze warnings are all the way down to central Florida, the Gulf Coast, and not so much that people will be affected physically by it, but you're talking more economically. It's a story about how probably the prices of some commodities like oranges will go up if they sustain a hard freeze over the orange crops. But the latest I've heard, maybe you have heard more detailed information, is that some of Florida has been spared the coldest of the cold, so it doesn't look like they took a direct hit, at least to this point. So
that's great, because I like oranges.
He does.
I like oranges, too.
He does. Hey, have you heard anything about these ice quakes? I was in researching this polar vortex yesterday. I came across an interesting article, and I guess it happens in northern climes of Canada quite often, where you get a lot of rain, let's say, and then you get a rapid freezing like we had here, and it literally causes the water in the ground to expand and cause these quakes. And I've never heard of it before I saw this article yesterday.
I haven't heard of it in those terms, but I think something similar to that we experience around here more than anything else is that people's pipes burst.
Oh yeah,
and we have water main breaks, and it is due to those fluctuations, and we know what damage water can cause from the flooding we've seen in the summer months, but also the expansion and contraction with the hot and cold and the warm up and the cool down rapidly. So you get those pipes underground and you get the water main breaks. So it sounds like something similar to that.
Well, you know, when I was going through, I leave very early in the morning, about 3:30. When I was going through both West Stockbridge and Great Barrington this morning, there were the villages were dark. None of the lights were on.
Because it was 3:30 in the morning.
No. They don't turn out. Every light was out.
So it was a power outage?
I suspect so. I mean, I can't say so.
Maybe they knew you were coming.
They were hiding from you.
Exactly.
The dark of night.
I don't think so. I don't think that's what it was.
I find it interesting and certainly necessary. But and you've been reporting all morning on your program on WNYT about the school closings here in Albany and much to the south, and that is not specifically because of the air temperature, but because of the wind chill. Correct.
Absolutely, and wind chill affects people differently, but they revised the wind chill formula about 10 years ago. Mm. It used to seem like, if you want to call it that, colder by the formula they used. And the formula will take up a whole old school blackboard to calculate, so we won't go into the details of the formula, but it has
Thank
to
you.
Do with how your body handles wind and the evaporation of moisture on your skin and the effect that it has in turning it colder on your body temperature. So, once you start getting into these levels, it becomes dangerous to be outside with exposed skin for more than 15 minutes to a half hour, which, you know, some kids wait at the bus for that long.
Well, that's right. And also in the cities and in many areas of who closed school was because so many kids walked to school.
Right.
And had an effect, obviously, on them to be out in the elements for a prolonged period of time would be dangerous. What are we talking about for the average wind around here?
Well, it's not going to be an enormous wind. I mean, something certainly we've seen greater levels of before, but a wind of 10 to 20 miles per hour will be sustained today. And then we'll see gusts at times to 30, maybe 40. But once you get above 30 miles per hour, the wind chill levels off. It doesn't get any worse, let's say, if there was a 60-mile-an-hour wind than if there was a 40-mile-an-hour wind.
Right.
There's only just so much evaporation that can go on.
So with
the wind speeds at those levels and temperatures between 0 and 10 above, the wind chill can go down to as low as 30 below, which doesn't take much to cause frostbite.
How rare are these polar vortices?
Very good.
Very nice.
I mean, in other words, not rare, but how rare is it that they weaken enough that the circular pattern becomes elliptical and comes all the way down here?
It's a great question, because I was reading in the in a couple of news reports, a meteorologist saying like 100 years ago this was much more common, so it almost saying that it was a cyclical thing.
Right. I mean, everything is cyclical in my estimation when it comes to weather, and it's not so much the shape of the vortex and how it becomes elliptical, the fact that it dips this far to the south. It just has to do with the weight and the dynamics and the thermodynamics and the atmosphere that drive these things. But in terms of how often or how rare it is, it does seem like they've become more of a rarity in the past few decades, and then you start getting into the whole climate discussion and climate change, and is that part of the reason, and why hasn't it happened as much? But it could be that we're in a short-term cycle, and by short-term in weather, you know, a 50-year cycle where we haven't had that many outbreaks of this polar vortex. But maybe we're on an upswing now, and this is the beginning of the next wave of them that will become more common, something like we haven't seen in 100 years.
But
remember,
I hope so.
We're talking about the history of the Earth here, the history of weather. So, you know, 100, 200, even 1,000 years really isn't that long.
The more we can say vortex, the better. So, I mean, maybe we can get another one in this season.
Not to mention vortices.
Right.
Yeah, vortices, that's impressive.
That is.
And not necessarily accurate, by
the way. And it's going to become part of the language. People will start applying these terms to people's personalities, things like that. You know what I mean? Reminds me of somebody. Somebody I once knew, something like that.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely, Alan. I've heard the term blue norther. What is that?
A blue norther, I think this is
something
that's more...
It's a bird.
It's what?
No, I made that up. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I thought you said it was a bird.
I did.
Oh, isn't that another show on this channel?
Yeah, that's right.
Bird show?
Don't want to hear what it sounds like?
Don't remind me.
A blue norther, basically. You're going to prevent me from answering this, I think. And this is more common out in the middle of the country where there's no mountains to block or push cold air one way or another. So when you have this big spill, if you will, of Arctic air out of Canada and onto the prairies and the plains, it just keeps going and it bleeds, or in some cases even surges south all the way down to Texas and even beyond, sometimes even into Mexico. And there's nothing stopping that north wind from just easing or gliding or racing it sometimes right down the east slopes of the Rockies and the high plains, and it could drop the temperature like we saw 40, 50, 60 degrees in a matter of hours in those places.
So I don't want to set you up, but I just want to ask the question and just put it out there because we're having the discussion. But in I know there's this passage in this New York Times article about the polar vortex. It was mentioned last night on NPR. But there are meteorologists that say that the changes to the polar vortex has become more common in the past 5 years, leading to suggestions by him and others that climate change in general and the decline in Arctic sea ice in particular may play a role, which is certainly something to look at. But again, this goes back to your earlier point about it all being cyclical, right?
Well, just because it's cyclical doesn't mean it always has to come back to a point where it started, whether it be 1 year ago or 10 or 100 or 1,000. They do go in waves, and everything's in constant motion in the atmosphere. But I think that the change in climate, whether it's to the extent that some folks believe or to the degree that others believe, still, you can't say that it doesn't play a role in why things happen on these larger scales like we're seeing.
When it when it comes to the next 24 hours, then what can we expect?
Well, it's still going to be cold, but I think, Alan, I don't think you could take the shorts and T-shirt out yet.
Well, thank God for that.
I don't think anyone was hoping.
Thank God it's radio, because that's exactly how Ray is dressed today.
That's not true, sir.
Well, that's pretty daring, but tomorrow will probably be a little bit milder in that we'll reach 20. The wind chills are going to come above zero, but the real good stuff, and maybe not swimming weather, but certainly more bearable, more tolerable weather, will probably happen late in the week or the weekend. We'll be back up into the 40s.
Now, Ray has a question, but before we get to that, we have a question from Jill, who wrote in and said, asked Paul if there had been no polar vortex, would we have had the 40 and 50 degree temperatures and the rain the whole time instead of the dip in temperature?
Uh-huh.
Well, if there was no polar vortex, we probably there'd be a lot of other implications. But
we'd be dead.
That's the answer to the question. No, but if there was no polar vortex, we'd probably would have had something more moderate and less of a dramatic temperature swing. But yeah, maybe we wouldn't have the rain either. It would have just been a light snow or freezing rain, and then temperatures around 30 the whole time.
So, you know, based on the amount of shoveling I've done, it seems like we've had a lot of snow. Where are we as per usual in our snowfall?
Well, right in Albany, we're almost a foot above the average to this point in the season.
Oh, that explains
Normally to this point, and I use the term normal very loosely, the 30-year average to this point is just under 20 inches of snow, 19.8. And we've picked up 31.6, so that's just under a foot above average to this point in the season.
So a lot of snow, a lot of cold, and what many of us would call a good old-fashioned North Country winter, right?
Yeah, that's the way I look at it. It's not so unusual when you think about a longer duration. This is more typical of a long winter that we've seen in the past. So it's not so far out of the ordinary. It's just that we haven't had one like this in a while.
So why we should go back to the other old term, a long winter's nap.
Ah.
Right. Paul Caiano is a meteorologist for WNYT and provides our weather here at WAMC, for which we are eternally grateful. Paul, it's wonderful to have you with us. Thank you very, very much for taking time out, and especially at the last minute. I appreciate it.
And thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Anytime.
Always good to talk to you. Thank you very much. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about other issues.
Oh, your mic's off now. Hang on.
That's right. Yes. Talk about other issues as well. Thank you, Ray.
My pleasure.
You're listening to It's the Vortex. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors and windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890. With 21 locations in New York and northern Vermont, CurtisLumber.com. And Mohawk Trading Post, Shelburne, Massachusetts, Native American-made moccasins, soapstone sculpture, sterling silver jewelry, Native-themed CDs, movies, and books. MohawkTradingPost.com.
Welcome back to our edition of either Blue Man Group or Stomp. I don't know.
Ah.
I don't know what Ray is trying to replicate.
Just digging the sounds, man.
Yeah, good morning and welcome. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. This story shouldn't take much time, only because we don't have a tremendous amount of information, but I am interested in Alan's thoughts on it. The Vice President of the United States is coming to Albany today. He will be in the Red Room of the Capitol at 11:30 to meet with the governor, talking about infrastructure as well as post-Hurricane Sandy work or Superstorm Sandy, I should say. And many have made this case of you have two potential presidential contenders in the same room.
Well, that's right. I don't have any doubt that he will be examined as a potential presidential candidate.
Which one, Cuomo or Biden?
No, not Cuomo. Cuomo is not going to run for president. Biden, this is it for Biden. Either he grabs the golden ring and takes it on. In the polls, he is not doing well against Hillary. So there is a question when you're a politician and you're the vice president of the United States, do you say, okay, I'm going to go for it and see whether we can just sort of turn things around? He's a very pleasant man. It won't hurt him to be going around the country and meeting people.
Some have made this case. He's 72 years old.
Right.
He has had a very full career.
Yes.
And that if, and you just alluded to the poll numbers versus Hillary, that if he wanted to be more front and center and he wanted to be sort of more on the radar that he could be, and because he isn't, is an indication that maybe he's just going to ride this out.
Yeah, you can read the tea leaves any way you want.
Yeah.
I can't believe the man doesn't want to be president of the United States. You don't become vice president. You don't become United States senator. You don't do all the things that he's done if, in fact, you're, a shrinking violet.
Right.
If you're a polar vortex. I think it's much more possible that he's testing the waters. Look, we've got a way to go yet. And things change. We've seen it before. We saw it with Obama and Hillary. Things change.
Yeah.
And if you don't take it on, it doesn't work for you.
And we only have about 30 seconds, but here's a guy from what I read, he every once in a while there's a story about him being goofy and saying something off, but people seem to like him. He's a very likable.
Yeah.
I mean, his numbers are better than most people in Washington. People like him.
Yeah, they say about Chris Christie, can you have a beer with him, as opposed to see a policy wonk. And I do think that he's a very nice man. I like him a lot from what I know of him.
Both politically and just the
he's
image
carried,
that he
and he's really carried the water for Obama with the Senate and everything else.
We'll be obviously having a lot more on the vice presidential visit throughout the day and certainly during Midday Magazine at noon today on WAMC. We will continue the roundtable and welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We're going to take a quick news break with NPR, and we will be back after this. Mm-hmm. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel, and we welcome your input, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable, at WAMC Roundtable. Let us go to some other subjects that we would like to talk about this morning. Let's begin with the big story, really, that came out of yesterday, besides the weather, and that is the Supreme Court and their acting in Utah in a move that cast doubt over the marriages of roughly 1,000 same-sex couples in Utah. The United States Supreme Court on Monday blocked further same-sex marriages there while state officials appeal a decision allowing such unions. The development created what Utah's attorney general called legal limbo for the same-sex couples who had wed in the state in recent weeks. With the state's ban on such unions reinstated for now, many wondered whether their window to marry in Utah had closed forever. And this brings up several questions, and first and foremost, of course, is that what that legal limbo is, and ultimately what it means for this issue in the court.
Well, you know, I'm no lawyer, but the answer is the court is saying, look, we have to let this thing take its course through the various federal appeals processes, and then we have to come back. But to me, what is fascinating is whether this signals an intention on the part of the court. Now, I believe this was a unanimous decision. So obviously, everybody's going to be circling the wagons on both sides. We obviously, know it's a fairly conservative court, but Justice Kennedy, who is the swing judge on the court and who is a bit of a libertarian himself, may just side with the people who are the four, usually, in the 5-4 decisions. I don't think anybody is making much out of this other than to say it's too bad for those people who got married and who really are going to be in limbo and how terrible it is. But in terms of the judicial process, in terms of the commentators I've heard, including on NPR, it was to be expected.
It was to be expected, and certainly not that this makes it right in any way, shape, or form, there was a warning that came out. Utah had warned gay couples that their marriages could be dissolved if it succeeded in its legal appeals. And then the state had also begun granting benefits to newlyweds, so that really is also where the limbo comes in, because the benefits have started to kick in.
Sure, joint filing.
Right, like and now all that. And where those the couples, the thousand mm-hmm. couples who married, where they are versus those who were not able to marry and so forth. So where all of that goes. It's interesting because we saw how this court ruled on gay marriage earlier last year.
Right.
And so how... You know, how much of this is geographical in the sense of Utah versus the rest of the world? And I know that that's not supposed to be a factor, right?
Well, it cuts in a lot of different ways. I mean, obviously, these justices on the Supreme Court have got to be thinking about states' rights. They always talk about states' rights, and they invoke them when they want to, and they ignore them when they want to. So I think that's something that might be a little bit of a hint as to what's to come. You're looking puzzled.
No, I'm just saying. So you think that the Tenth Amendment, the states' rights, yeah, is strengthened by this?
No, I don't. I think, you know, all I'm doing is looking for hints as to where everybody is on that court. Sooner or later, this whole thing has to be reconciled.
Nationally?
Well, yes. I mean, if you have judges in different parts of the country saying different things or coming up with different answers, you have a wonderful federal judge in San Francisco who's... You know, who took this on with great energy, and people are allowed to do that, to marry. So, somebody's got to reconcile all of this, and I'm a little afraid of what might happen.
William Eskridge, who is a law professor at Yale University, said, "Is it a harbinger of what the Supreme Court will do? No, I don't think so. We know nothing more than we did the day after the court issued a pair of same-sex marriage decisions in June, meaning that those were as much of a question mark as this stay was that was granted yesterday, which is an interesting point.
So we know nothing.
Well,
what?
And yet we managed to make 8 minutes out of it. It's amazing.
Okay. 8 minutes is probably enough. Or as the old saying goes, what else you got?
All right. Well, we do have other stuff. So let's get to that. We want to change subjects. And, this broke over the weekend, and it was made official yesterday. So I didn't mention it yesterday, and I figured I would wait till today. We've talked about this story in the past, and that is Liz Cheney running for Senate in Wyoming. She has dropped out of the race, citing a family health crisis. I don't believe, as of my reading last night, there were no details as to what that health crisis is. Within the family, there was a lot of questions and a lot of analysis by pundits saying that she was in political trouble, and that is why she got out of the race.
I have no doubt about that.
Yeah. So what do you think? What happened there?
Well, here's what happened. They read the polls. You had a popular U.S. senator. She came in and she said, okay, the Tea Party is putting a freeze on everything, and therefore, everybody's running for the hills. Then what began to happen is, Boehner stands up and he takes on the Tea Party, and his Lieutenant Ryan takes on the Tea Party, and all of a sudden things changed. So there she is out there with her hand in the wind, and running based on the fact that she's the more conservative, trying to be the more conservative person. Then this whole thing happens with her sister, who is gay, taking her on. The two women don't talk to each other. And if you're going to be out conservatizing the other guy, you got to say, I'm against gay marriage. Well, that didn't work out for her, because it really looked like she had cast her her sister to the winds, and it didn't work, and people didn't like it. In comes Cheney, and he doesn't know what to do. He plays both sides against the middle if he can possibly do it. He says he loves both of his daughters. He's for gay marriage, but he thinks one daughter who is running is justified in her position, and nobody really knows what to make of the whole thing. The voters are perplexed. They said, hey, we got a guy we like, and we're not going to throw him out. They read the polls, and she quits.
The party must have been perplexed as well. I mean, this is a popular incumbent, and to run in a primary against him, That's a tough nut to crack.
Well, in the Washington Post coverage this morning, I thought it was interesting. They made the point that this announcement of her withdrawal was as much of a surprise as her announcement to run in the first place. And ever since then, there hasn't been much traction politically in the polls. The polls never indicated that she was really catching on in any way. And quite frankly, in the, I believe, 10 weeks or so that the campaign was up and running, as the term the Post uses, is chaotic throughout its entire time.
It was a mess. You know, people, when they run for political office, they never really know what they're in for. That every speck of dirt and anything that ever happened is going to be brought
up.
Well,
especially when you're the child of a former vice president.
Right. Right. And you're telling me that this thing with her sister wasn't going to become, a major to-do? I think one would have had to anticipate it. If you had somebody who was about to be indicted or who had gotten himself into a lot of trouble, but that wasn't the case here. This was just pure unadulterated, I want to be the senator. Look, in the United States, we're allowed to run for political office. Anybody can do it. But Mario Cuomo used to say to me, the good politicians can count six moves ahead. Right. If this happens, then that happens. They come back, and then I do this, and then he said, and the bad politicians can't count over one.
So yeah. You can say a lot of things about Dick Cheney,
and I do,
and you do, and a lot of people have. But he is a political animal. So can we suppose at some point there was a conversation?
Oh yeah. I'm sure there were daily conversations, several daily conversations. And remember, there's a certain amount of pride in this. This guy's had heart attacks. He's getting older. It's where he did his service in Congress.
In Wyoming.
Right?
Yes.
There is this expectation in his own mind that maybe, you know, his name would carry her through, the Cheney name.
And I don't want to make a whole bunch. I don't want to make a lot out of this. I'm just curious. You know, when people leave for different reasons and they say, you know, I want to spend more time with my family, or
sure.
But I do wonder, even politically, when you say, well, it's because of a family health crisis, it's one of my children, and then you don't elaborate any further, it seems odder than just saying, you know, we've just decided to suspend the race. There's something mysterious about it.
Maybe it's true, though.
I'm not saying it isn't true. It may very well be true, but then it just sort of casts more question as to, you know, then people become concerned and wonder what's going on, and there's the digging that wouldn't normally take place if you just said, I've decided to spend more time with my family.
I'm going to side with you on this one, Joe. I truly think that, you know, there's a certain heft that, you know, you get when you just simply say, okay, this isn't working out. I'm withdrawing from the race.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it looks duplicitous, you know, and it's potentially duplicitous. Ray's right. Maybe it is that there's a health issue, you know, among the children. But I think that we are so inured to the idea that people use, as you just said, the same litany of excuses, you know.
Right.
And sometimes when they turn out not to be quite right, I'm not saying that's the case here, but when they turn out to be not quite right, the respect level even goes down further. But this, the joke about more time with my family, you know, you get a 75-year-old politician who hasn't spent much time with his family, and all of a sudden he says, I'm quitting to spend more time with my family. That's pretty funny.
the time has come.
Meantime, some of, you know, his kids are retiring.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up our hour this morning. We love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC comes from Amtrak, announcing the Amtrak Weekend Getaway Package for round-trip travel Thursdays through Mondays between New York City and Montreal, January 9th through April 24th. Advanced reservations required. Amtrak.com. Beacon Institute for Rivers and Estuaries of Clarkson University, offering a hybrid online and in-person Clarkson Master of Science in Engineering Management for working professionals. BIRE.org/MSEM for upcoming hybrid programs in the region. And TSL, Time and Space Limited in Hudson, New York, screening independent and classic movies Thursdays through Sundays, including the Polish film Aftermath, screening January 9th through 11th, timeandspace.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. Again, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Interesting story on Morning Edition this morning regarding the secret burglary that exposed J. Edgar Hoover's FBI more than 40 years ago. On the evening of March 8th, 1971, a group of burglars carried out a plan. They pried open the door of an FBI office in Pennsylvania and stole files about the Bureau's surveillance of anti-war groups and civil rights organizations. Hundreds of agents tried to identify the culprits, but the crime went unsolved until now. For the first time, a new book reveals that the burglars were peace demonstrators who wanted to start a debate about the FBI's unchecked power to spy on Americans. And it's coming out at a time when the country is weighing the merits of surveillance
exactly.
All over again. It's a very interesting story.
It's a wonderful story. There is a question as to, there will be people listening to this broadcast right now who say, hey, you do the crime, you do the time. That's what civil disobedience is all about. Gandhi did it and others, but there are those who say, hey, no, if the FBI was putting tape recorders under Martin Luther King's bed, which they were, and if they were doing things to involve themselves in the politics of the country, and they were doing illegal things, that people had a right to know about that. And this group did. The statute of limitations apparently runs out after 5 years. You know, I read on burglary, although I have
That's amazing. I mean, 5 years to break into the FBI?
Well, I have a feeling that they could have probably come up with some other stuff. But so what happened was, it's a great story. One of the guys who was in it was having dinner with the woman from the Washington Post who had written the original story when they sent her the documents, the incriminating documents about the FBI. And he said, by the way, you know that we're the ones who sent it to you.
She almost
fell out of her chair. And she gets a book out of it. This is the book that's coming out right now. And you're right, Joe. This story is very important because obviously there's a parallel with Assange, with Snowden. What do the American people have a right to know? And are those people who are saying, hey, look, these people are traitors and should do the time or whatever else, are they right? Or is it right to when the government is doing wrong, to let people know about it as an act of civil disobedience?
The book is called The Burglary, The Discovery of J. Edgar Hoover's Secret FBI. It's fascinating to me, and I mean, I find this interesting even when we talk about Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt, that there's still really interesting things to write about these figures. But given that Hoover is still somewhat recent, And because he was in for so long, and because it was so complex, there's fascinating things. There's so many stories there that still haven't been told.
Well, the problem really is that history is funny. That people will start making stuff up as well as
the further
real,
along you go in time.
That you can. However, of one thing there is no doubt: the guy really had the political establishment in a sensitive situation, putting it mildly.
Had them by
the hair on their head, and so
short hair,
and so what ended up happening was that it was a bad time. They are never going to allow an FBI head to stay in that long. In fact, I believe it was Mueller. Was it Mueller who they had to pass a special law giving him a little extension on his defined term? When he was the FBI, am I right about that? I think I am.
I believe so.
Yeah. And the Congress had to meet because they know what happens, what the danger is. Look, in the Soviet Union, they had Beria. Here we had a guy who presidents were scared of, and we know, as I've said before, that Bobby Kennedy had no use for Hoover whatsoever, but they didn't get rid of him.
No, and the battle in the 50s and early 60s between Kennedy, who was going after the mob, and Hoover, who even at that time said, well, look, there's no mob.
There's no mob.
And it's the backstory behind that is fascinating because the politics involved, I think JFK said, hey, listen, leave Hoover alone, basically, because they were all scared of the guy.
Well, we all know that JFK had moments of what would be called indelicacies here, and that the FBI, you see?
I see,
and that the FBI, and that the FBI certainly knew about that. And you know, you didn't even have to tell anybody. Look, you know, JFK was a controversial guy in that he's beloved by so many of us, but his behavior was not always perfect.
I do want to, the other story we wanted to make mention of was regarding insider trading and the trial that begins. That is getting underway this week over what prosecutors call the most lucrative insider trading scheme ever, which will delve into the trading activities of Stephen Cohen, a founder of the SAC Capital Advisors hedge fund.
Who they're after but can't get. And the guy who's on trial,
Matthew Martoma.
Who's on trial refuses to take the deal that they've obviously offered him, which is throw in the boss and you either get light or go free. And he won't take it, which is an interesting thing. His wife is a pediatrician. He's got a couple of kids. When the FBI first came to his house, I was fascinated to read he fainted. And what I'm struck by is this concept of you did insider trading. You had a conversation. You knew that this drug wasn't working. You dumped all your stock that you had invested in this. The SAC people had done that. And insider trading is not fair or not good. Now, wait a second. Maybe you can call me Ishmael. You can call me anything you want. But I truly believe that a good deal of what goes on the American stock market is what we call insider trading. It may not reach to that moment, to this point where they can identify the two-hour conversation that led to this. But please, don't tell me that a good deal of what trading goes on isn't based on somebody who got a tip.
You have, and the ingredients in this story have all the makings of an interesting story, which are palatial mansions.
And a movie.
And multi-million dollar artwork, and this blockbuster financial, what were we talking, $276 million financial scheme?
Yeah.
It's a lot of money, obviously. And
not so much by today's standards.
Well, no, but they're still calling it the largest insider trading crime in U.S. history.
Right.
So
my point exactly. So in other words, this is the largest. What about the next largest and the
largest
tenth,
that they know about
and the tenth yep. largest? Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how it all works out. Oh, and the guy's basically a recluse, which also makes it interesting. So, when you make that kind of money, why leave? just stay in the palatial mansion, We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Gentlemen, thank you very much, as always. Appreciate
Thanks, Joe.
It. We'll see you tomorrow and look forward to that conversation. Coming up next, we'll have book picks after news and our billboard. You're listening to the Roundtable and other things. I won't list them all, the whole litany. You're listening to the Roundtable and WAMC.